Okay, good. So last time we just reviewed some basic stuff about cosmology, right? So last time we talked about things like the FRW metric. We talked about how particles move in this sort of space-time, so things like geodesics. I think we also talked a bit about distances. And I hear that in the tutorial, you'll have more practice working with distances in these sort of FRW universes. Okay, so that was last time. So then today, the next thing I wanted to do was then to talk about how the metric evolves over time. Okay, so yeah, so the evolution of the space-time. So evolution of G nu. So just to remind you all, okay, so last time we wrote the metric in the following form. We wrote it in, as a, okay, so the line element is ds squared is minus dt squared plus a squared of t, and then times all the spatial part, which you wrote as dr squared plus, and this capital D, d omega squared. Okay, and so just to remind you all, t was our time coordinate, r was our co-moving radial coordinate, and then theta and phi were the angular coordinates. So we said last time that this scale factor A, this is a function of time. But last time, we didn't actually say, what function of time that is. We didn't say how this A of t actually evolves over time. And so today, I wanted to go through that. Okay. So the equations that govern how this metric evolves, those equations are called the Einstein field equations, which I believe you guys have seen in your previous classes on relativity. But just to remind you, okay, the form of the Einstein equations is g mu nu is a pi g t mu nu, where this g is the Einstein tensor, this other g is Newton's gravitational constant, and t is the stress energy tensor. Some other, it's also called the energy momentum tensor in some books and in some literatures. So again, so here I'm setting units where the speed of light c is 1. If you want to keep units, I think that there's 4 powers of c on the bottom here. I'm not sure exactly. But if you just, check units to make everything consistent, you can, figure out how many c's are needed. Okay, so good. So then let's just discuss what these various terms mean. So we'll start off with the stress energy tensor, t mu nu. Okay, so just roughly speaking, you can think of this as, telling you something about, the density and the flux of energy and momentum. Energy and momentum. Okay, in some sort of crude sense. If you want, you can even, think heuristically about the components of the stress energy tensor, right? Heuristically speaking, if you write the stress energy tensor, as some matrix, the time piece corresponds to like the density of energy. So call it energy density. This is like the flux of energy. This is the density of momentum. This is like the flux of momentum. You guys have seen that before? Okay, good. Okay, so next week, I think, so we'll go through an explicit expression for the stress energy tensor in terms of the, in terms of the distribution of particles. But for now, let's just start off with some simple case. Okay, so for now, let's just think of the stress energy tensor for some perfect fluid described by some, by some energy density in its own frame, some pressure in its own frame, and then some bulk velocity telling us how to, how to relate its frame to our observed frame. Okay, so yeah, so consider perfect fluid, with some energy density rho, some pressure p, and then some bulk velocity of the fluid. Okay. So for this sort of perfect fluid, the stress energy tensor takes a simple form, which we can write as T mu nu is rho plus P u mu u nu, and then plus P g mu nu. Okay, so again, right, so these are the pressure and the energy density in the fluid's own rest frame. So as I said last time, so for our purposes, it'll be most convenient to work in the rest frame of the matter contents of the universe. Okay, so therefore here, what we'll do is to work in the fluid zone rest frame, the frame where this four velocity u is just, you know, purely time-like. Okay, so so we'll work in the frame where, you know, this four velocity u is just, you know, 1, 0, 0, 0. Okay, so in this frame, the stress energy tensor takes a really simple form. I'll write it the following way. So T with one contravariant index, one covariant index down, then is just minus rho P, P, P on the diagonals and zero everywhere else. Okay. The reason why I'm doing one up, one down index, you know, just is to avoid factors of the metric appearing in, you know, in this expression. Okay, now you might recall that the way that we express conservation of energy, conservation of mass and momentum, you know, is via the, you know, the vanishing of the divergence of the stress energy tensor. You've seen that, right? Okay, good. So let's write the vanishing divergence in the following way. So the covariant derivative of T mu nu equals zero. Okay. Good. So these are four equations for the different possible values of the leftover index mu. Okay. And those four equations have the following four interpretations. So the time part of it. So mu equals T or okay. So I'll write zero as the time coordinate. Okay, so for mu equals zero, that's just the famous continuity equation. Right, and what it says is that the time derivative of the energy density plus the divergence, the spatial divergence of the momentum, momentum flux, thank you, vanishes. Okay, and then similarly, you know, the Euler equation is time derivative of the momentum density. God damn it, I always mess this up. Okay, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah. Time derivative of energy density plus divergence of the energy flux vanishes. Time derivative of momentum density plus divergence of momentum flux vanishes. Good, okay, yeah. So the time part is the continuity equation, and the spatial part is the it's called the Euler equation, okay, you know, which you can think of just as like F equals ma, but for, you know, but for fields. Good, okay. So for example, so now if we take our explicit form of the stress energy tensor, and if we take our explicit form of the metric, and therefore then the Christoffel symbols, et cetera, we can then work out all of these covariant derivatives, okay? And so if we evaluate, for example, the continuity equation, okay, the final expression is really simple. It just says something close to what you've seen before, okay? The partial derivative d rho dt plus 3 a dot over a, where again, dot here means partial time derivative. Rho plus p equals zero. Okay? And so what this says is that the rate at which the energy density dilutes as universe expands, okay, that rate depends on the expansion rate, the energy density, but also depends on the pressure. Okay? And that's something that you may have seen before as the first law of thermodynamics, right? You know, dE plus p dV equals zero. Okay, so we're used to how the energy density's rate of change depends on the pressure. Okay, and so this is just a restatement of something that you've seen before. Okay, good. So then let's work through an example of using this. Okay, so let's take a perfect fluid with some constant equation of state, where the pressure is related to the density just by some constant equation of state parameter W. Okay, so suppose that we have a fluid behaving this way. Then our continuity equation becomes very simple. Okay, so as plugging in P as W rho, we get that, here I'll write it over here, d rho dt plus 3, again, A dot over A, which is just Hubble, 1 plus W rho equals 0, right? We can then rearrange terms, okay? So again, so this is just rho dots. Okay, so then we can move, so then we can, get rid of the dt's, okay? Or rearrange terms to get d rho over rho equals minus 3, 1 plus w dA over A, right? Okay, and then integrating, assuming W is constant, okay, we can see that the solution then is that the energy density scales with the scale factor as A to the minus 3, 1 plus W, okay? And again, for constant W. Okay?
Wait, sorry, would you mind repeating one more time why we set the pressure to be proportional to the density, energy density?
Yeah, so we're assuming that our fluid has this equation of state, okay? And so now what I'll do is to go through some examples of these sort of fluids, okay? So one example of this is just ordinary non-relativistic matter, okay? So matter like the matter in this room made out of particles that are moving non-relativistically, okay? So for non-relativistic matter, the pressure is negligible compared to the energy density, right? So for example, the air in this room, the pressure is negligible compared to onto the rest mass energy density of the molecules in this room, which then corresponds to W close to zero, right? So therefore for the sort of non-relativistic matter, this says that as the volume expands, the energy density scales like A to the minus 3. Right? And that should make sense, okay? If we have some box of gas and we let it expand, the density should dilute like 1 over volume. Makes sense, right? Okay, another example, let's do relativistic particles, radiation, okay? So for radiation, pressure is equal to 1/3 rho c squared. So he'll write this as rho over 3. Okay, which means that the equation of state W is equal to 1/3. Okay, so then we can see that therefore for radiation composed out of relativistic particles, the energy density as the volume expands scales like A to the minus 4. Okay, so therefore the energy density dilutes faster for these sort of relativistic particles than it does for non-relativistic matter, okay? So it has 3 powers of A from the volume, but also, but also 1 extra power of A. And you all see physically where that extra power of A comes from? Or do you guys have any guesses for just like intuitively, physically, why there's 1 extra power of A as the universe expands, for the sort of relativistic radiation compared to non-relativistic matter?
Energy is 1 over length, so.
Exactly, okay, so last time we talked about how momenta redshift, okay? Right, so we said last time that the momentum redshifts like 1 over A, okay? So for non-relativistic particles where, E is square root of P squared plus M squared, okay, so for non-relativistic, this P is negligible. So therefore, as this momentum redshifts, E doesn't change much. It's just M, right? But however, conversely, for relativistic particles, where P is much bigger than M, then as P redshifts, E also goes like 1 over A, giving us, therefore, this extra power of A in the rate at which the energy density dilutes. Okay, so makes sense? Any questions about that? Okay, good. So, So next week, you know, so next week I think that we'll talk a bit more about the stress energy tensor. But for now, let's come back to this Einstein equation, okay? So one term that some of you might be wondering about in the Einstein equations that I haven't included is the cosmological constant, okay? So conventionally, you know, okay, well, right. So what is a cosmological constant? You know, so it's a possible extra term you can include in the field equations. Conventionally, I think people put it on the left-hand side. I think it's written as g mu nu plus lambda metric tensor mu nu equals 8 pi g t mu nu. Okay, so I'm going to ignore this, okay? So in this class, what I'll do just is to move this term over to the right-hand side and think of it as a contribution to the stress energy tensor, okay? You know, so the physical way of thinking about that is that this would be a contribution to the stress energy tensor proportional to the metric tensor, okay? And therefore, it would correspond to something like the, you know, the energy density associated with the vacuum, okay? So a vacuum energy density necessarily has to have a stress energy tensor proportional to the metric tensor, right? You know, since it has to be Lorentz invariant, okay? You know, so if there were any sort of vacuum energy density, it would contribute to the stress energy tensor with a term proportional to the metric tensor, which looks just like this. And so therefore, I will just reabsorb whatever this is into an effective vacuum energy term, okay? And so therefore, for that reason, I will neglect this altogether. Okay. Any problems with that, or are people good with that?
But this equation does not have lambda.
This equation does not have lambda, sorry?
Like this equation does not assume that we have lambda because, is that right?
Oh, no, no. Okay, good. So let's do lambda. Okay, so, okay, good. Well, what would the stress energy tensor be for lambda? Okay, so as we said, it'll be proportional to the metric tensor. So therefore, this term has to vanish. So therefore, it'll have p equal to minus rho, right? Okay, so therefore, the equation of state for lambda, for vacuum energy, would be w equals minus 1. Okay, and now if we plug in w equals minus 1 here, what we find is that as the universe expands, the energy density doesn't change, which is what you expect for vacuum energy density, right? So if you take a box of vacuum and you make the box expand, the energy density doesn't change, right? Okay, yeah, I know. Right, so therefore all this applies perfectly well for lambda. Right, yeah, I know. It's just convenient it's convenient, you know, just to reabsorb whatever lambda was as an effective energy density for the vacuum.
Why can't we work with a fluid which has a vacuum energy density lambda and also has some radiation of matter?
Oh, we can. We can. Good. That'll be coming soon. But for now, first I just wanted to work through some very simple examples. The simplest thing, the simplest example you can do is to have just one component in the universe. Okay. But soon we will work out what happens for universes like ours that have many different components in them. Matter, radiation, vacuum energy, dark energy, neutrino, I mean everything, yeah. You'll be sick of it very soon, I promise you. Good. Okay, good. So that actually saved me talking about some other things, so I appreciate that. Okay, good. So any further questions before we move on to the left-hand side of the Einstein equations, the Einstein tensor? We're all good? Okay, good. So then let's go through the Einstein tensor. So you guys have had GR recently, right? So therefore, you don't need me to write out explicitly how the Einstein tensor looks, do you? Okay, good. Because, no, I mean, is this, I mean is it, it isn't bad, but it's... it's annoying. So good. So then I will actually skip. Oh my God, this changed. I don't know what to do with this.
Whoa, that didn't work now.
It didn't work the entire year.
Wait, what?
Like you can press presets and it'll do this crazy thing, but everyone's just been holding the button to make it go up and down.
Well, that's what I'm used to, but this looks different, and I'm scared of this. Well, okay, that's up there. I don't know how to bring it down. Okay, anyway, the Einstein tensor. Maybe I'll go over here because I don't know. right, okay, so yeah, so you guys know how it's related to the Ricci tensor. The Ricci tensor is related to the Riemann tensor. Riemann's related to the Christoffel symbols, and last time we saw how the Christoffel symbols are related to the metric derivatives, right? Okay, good, so you guys know all of that. So then I can skip all of this and then just jump to now, let's just plug in our metric way up there into the expression you know for the Einstein tensor. So for the homogeneous isotropic FRW metric, the Einstein tensor has a really simple form. The only non-zero components, it might be useful for you guys actually to work this out yourselves if you want to, okay? But if you don't want to, I guess it's also fine. I'll tell you the answer, okay? So the only non-zero components are the time-time and space-space components. The time-time component looks like the following. -3 a dot over a squared, so Hoppel squared, plus k over a r squared, okay, where again r was the curvature, the radius of curvature in our metric, and again a was the scale factor, and in this k is just a number either +1, 0, or -1, if you recall from last time. Okay, so that was the time-time. And then the space-space part of the metric, Gij, also has a simple form. It's -2 a double dot over a plus a dot over a squared plus k over a r squared. All this multiplied by Kronecker delta ij. Okay? Okay, good. And so again, dot here just means d by dt. Okay, good. So now we have worked out both the left-hand side and also the right-hand side of the field equations, right? Left-hand side is the Einstein tensor. Right-hand side, way over there now, is the stress-energy tensor. So then all we have to do now just is to set left-hand side equal to right-hand side. Okay, that'll then tell us then evolution equations for the scale factor in terms of the matter energy contents of the universe. Okay, so let's do that. So first let's set this G00 equal to T00. T00 minus rho okay. We can bring this into a more conventional form. So first let's move the -3 over to this side. Okay. And then also then recall that a dot over a is just the Hubble parameter h. Okay, so we get h squared plus k over a r squared equals 8 pi g over 3 times rho. And then we more conventionally bring this term over to this side. Okay, so then minus k over a r. Okay, and so this is called the first Friedmann equation. Okay. I'll call it Friedmann 1, I don't know. Okay, and so if you recall, h is just a dot over a, and so therefore the first Friedmann equation tells us that the first derivative of the scale factor is related to how much energy density there is currently in the universe, as well as the amount of spatial curvature in the universe. Okay? Also, let me just make a note of the sign of the curvature piece, okay? So written this way, curvature makes a negative contribution. Positive curvature makes a negative contribution to the Hubble expansion rate. Okay, written this way. Okay, good. So that was the time-time part. Next, let's do the space space parts. Okay, so we set this equal to a pi g tij, and tij is just p times times the identity matrix. Okay, so okay, good. Here I can do it less violently. Okay. Right. So that. Okay. So yeah. So now setting this equal to a pi g times p, we get minus two a double dot over a. Okay. I'll leave it for now. Plus a dot over a squared plus k over a r squared equals a pi g p the pressure, right? So far so good. Okay, so now we can simplify this a bit using the first Friedmann equation. Okay, so this term was just the left-hand side of the time-time piece, right? Okay, so this term is just 8 pi g rho over 3. And so then I'll just move this term over to this side. Okay, so first let's move the minus sign over. And then I'll move this term over to this side. And also I'll divide by 2 everywhere. So this becomes a 4. This becomes a 4. And then I move this over to this side, so we get a double dot over a equals minus 4 pi g over 3 times rho, and then minus 4 pi g times p. And then we can combine these two terms, since they both have 4 pi g, as minus 4 pi g over 3 rho plus 3 p. Okay, and so this is the second Friedmann equation. And so what this tells us is that the second time derivative of the scale factor depends on both the energy density, but also on the pressure. Okay. And so now we have evolution equations for everything, okay? So we know how to evolve the scale factor as a function of time using these two Friedmann equations. We also know how to evolve the contents of the universe, the energy density, the pressure, okay, using our equation of state, using our stress energy tensor, which is covariantly conserved, okay? So therefore, now we can do everything, right? We're now set to fully evolve all the fields, all the metrics, everything forward in time in our universe. Any questions about that? Yeah. Okay, so if not, then let's just go through an example of doing that. Okay, so let's start off with the simplest example. So what we'll do is to consider an example universe that is spatially flat. So a universe where this k is zero, or the curvature radius goes to infinity. A spatially flat universe filled with a single component of something with some constant equation of state, constant W. Okay, and then let's work out how the scale factor evolves, and also how this field evolves. Okay, so the first Friedmann equation, if we drop this term, okay, the first Friedmann, our first Friedmann equation is, a dot over a squared is 8 pi g over 3 rho. And then before, we found that rho scales like this power of a to the minus 3, 1 plus w. Okay, so let's write that as rho is equal to some present day value rho naught, a to the minus 3, 1 plus w. Okay, so then plugging this into here, we get a pi g rho naught over 3 a to the minus 3 1 plus w. These are all just constants, okay? And so I'll just relabel all these constants as just one number, which is the present day Hubble parameter squared. Does that make sense to everyone what I'm doing? Okay, good. That's our first Friedmann equation. And so solving this is really easy. Okay, so let's just square root both sides. Okay, so we get a dot over a is h naught a to the minus 3, 1 plus w over 2. Okay, and then I'll move the dt over to this side, all the a's over to this side. Okay? So that gives us that a to the 3 halves, 1 plus w, and then minus 1, dA equals h naught dt. Right? So far, so good? Okay, so we just integrate both sides. H naught is a constant, so I'll just write it this way. Okay, so left-hand side is easy. It's 2 over 3, 1 plus w, a to the 3 halves, 1 plus w. Equals h naught t. Oh, can you guys see this or not?
I can't.
I might be able to fix that. Okay. And then we can then just solve for a in terms of t. Okay, the important thing is that a is some power of t, right? And that power depends on the equation of state. We can just write it out explicitly. So a is 3 halves 1 plus w h naught t, all of this to then the inverse power. Okay? Good, so what we find is that for this sort of very simple spatially flat universe with just one component in it, the universe expands as a power law in time, okay, where the power law index depends on, you know, the type of matter, you know, matter, radiation, vacuum energy, etc. Okay, so for example, so for non-relativistic matter, where again, W was zero, you can see that the scale factor grows proportional in time to t to the 2/3. Okay. And then similarly for relativistic matter, where we had w is equal to 1/3, we instead get that a goes like square root of time. I should make one note about something that was a bit sloppy about. Okay. So doing this only makes sense for w not equal to minus 1, right? Okay, so for now, we will assume w not equal to minus 1, and then in 2 minutes, we'll come back to w equal to minus 1. Okay, because this case actually, the behavior here actually works out to be somewhat interesting. But again, so for not vacuum energy, for not cosmological constants, what we find is that the behavior for a single component universe just is that A goes like some power law in time. Okay, another interesting or maybe surprising thing is that in solving for this, okay, we use only the first Friedmann equation. We never use a second Friedmann equation. And that might seem kind of surprising, right? Naively, you would have thought that both equations would have been needed to find the solution. And so why didn't we need it? The reason why we didn't need it is that we actually did use, we actually did use both first and second Friedmann equations, but secretly. Okay. What I mean by that is the following. So if you look at the second Friedmann equation, okay, here, right, you can see that it involves the second derivative of the scale factor. The first Friedmann equation involves the first derivative of the scale factor, the first time derivative, right? So if we take one time derivative of the first Friedmann equation, okay, you know, that'll involve terms including the second derivative of the scale factor, okay? But also it'll involve, on the right-hand side, terms like the time derivative of the density, right? Now recall from the continuity equation way up there, we showed how the time derivative of the density relates to the density, but also the pressure. And if you notice in our second Friedmann equation, a double dot relates to the density and the pressure, okay? So it turns out that actually, in some sense, the second Friedmann equation is a bit redundant, okay? All the information expressed in it already is present in the first Friedmann equation combined with combined with the conservation of stress energy. Okay, so does that make sense to everyone? Okay, good. Good, so then let's come back now to the case that I skipped of W equal to minus one, because that case is actually somewhat interesting. So for W equal to minus one, okay, we have A dot over A is H naught constant, right? This term is just 1, right? So for W equal to minus 1, okay, our Friedmann equation boils down to A dot over A equals H naught, I think, if I kept all the terms. Yes. Okay, so then solving this is again easy. Okay, we can move the dt over to this side, so we get dA over A is H naught dt. Integrate both sides, okay? And so what we find then, the solution is that A goes like e to the H naught t, okay? So this behavior is somewhat different than the other cases we found, okay? So here what we get is actually exponential growth, okay, of the scale factor, which is very different from the other cases. Okay, right. As we said before, W equals to minus one corresponds to a universe that's dominated by vacuum energy or cosmological constant. Okay, so therefore, any universes that are, again, dominated by vacuum energy, they will grow exponentially in time. Okay, and so keep that in the back of your mind, because that fact will be really important later on, when we discuss things like inflation, cosmic inflation, or for example, dark energy. Okay, good. So then this will be important for inflation and also for dark energy. All right. Okay, good. So far, we've only been talking about these very simple examples that have only one component in them. But of course, you were eager to now do the more complicated multi-component cases. So then let's start looking at that. Okay, so now multiple component universes. Like, for example, our own actual universe, right? You know, so our universe has matter, like us. As radiation, like the cosmic, radiation like the cosmic microwave background. There seems to be evidence for something like dark energy or vacuum energy. Okay, yeah, I know. So multiple things are present in our universe. Okay, good. So then let's now talk about solutions in this more general case. So for future convenience, let me define a useful quantity, which is called the critical density. Call it rho crit. So if we look at our first Friedmann equation, okay, way up there, okay, you can see that a universe that has no spatial curvature will satisfy h squared equals 8 pi g rho over 3. Okay, So let's define the row critical as, well, as that, okay? So 3h squared over 8 pi g, okay? So what this says is that for a given expansion rate, for a given Hubble parameter h, okay, if there is this much total energy density in that universe, okay, you know, that universe then won't need any extra spatial curvature to balance Einstein's equations. Okay? If there's more or less density than this critical value, then for that given Hubble expansion rate, a non-zero amount of spatial curvature will be needed. But if there's exactly this much energy density, then, you know, that universe then won't need any spatial curvature, i.e., it can be spatially flat. Okay? So now, conventionally, in the cosmology literature, you know, so it's conventional to express all of these energies, I mean, you know, all these energy densities of the various components in units of this critical energy density. Okay? And so a standard notation is to write this parameter omega, okay? Okay, so omega for say species I as the ratio of the energy density in species I compared to the critical energy density. And again, okay, and again, these are all functions of time. Time or redshift or scale factor, whatever. Okay. So yeah, so for example, omega matter of time is rho matter compared to rho critical. And so on, for radiation, for vacuum energy density, or say lambda, and so on and so on. We can even define an effective omega for the curvature piece. Okay, so we can write omega curvature as minus k over a squared r squared h squared. Okay, and so this omega k then just tells us how important the curvature is compared to the other terms in the Friedmann equation. Okay, yeah. Just one thing I want to note here is that I've written this with a minus sign, okay, and so positive curvature corresponds to a negative omega k. You'll see different books or papers using different sign conventions for this. You know, just be careful about this sign convention that I'm using here, okay? You know, so positive spatial curvature makes a negative contribution to omega k, and therefore a negative contribution to the Hubble expansion rate, okay? Good. So for this sign convention that I'm using, okay, then all of the omegas, omega matter plus omega radiation plus omega vacuum energy plus omega curvature, whatever else is present in the universe, okay, by definition, they all add up to one. Okay? And this statement holds true for all times, even though each of these are all evolving over time, as I said. Okay? So any questions about this?
Corresponds to a flat universe.
No, right? Okay, so again, even if we have non-zero curvature, okay, we'll have this non-zero omega k. All I'm doing here just is, just is expressing each of these energy densities in units of the Hubble expansion rate, basically. Does that make sense? I'm still seeing some puzzled looks. Okay, so this critical energy density, this is the density that would be needed to make the universe spatially flat. That doesn't mean that an actual universe has that energy density.
Yes.
Right, okay.
If they add up to one, then all they add up to rho critical.
So if omega curvature is zero, then they, yeah, exactly. You know, that then corresponds to a flat universe, a spatially flat universe, right? Right, but instead for a non-flat universe, this term will be non-zero. Right, okay, yeah.
You drew dot dot dot. Are there more components?
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine all sorts of crazy things in the universe.
Is that lambda supposed to be dark energy, or is that supposed to be the cosmological constant?
This lambda, this lambda I'm thinking of as, as like w equal to minus one exactly. But as you say, though, dark energy could be something besides this. Dark energy might have a different equation of state.
So what would, if you're assuming that would be, it would have a w minus one, what would be the plus dot dot dot?
Oh, yeah, okay, good. So then things like maybe dark energy, which is not exactly a vacuum energy density, right?
But isn't W equal to minus one, doesn't that, is this, okay, so that is from the cosmological constant, that's not?
Yeah.
Dark energy?
Yeah, that's right, okay. W equal to minus one corresponds exactly to either vacuum energy density, okay, which is therefore independent of the expansion rate, or the expansion of the universe, or perhaps a cosmological constant, right? Dark energy could be something else, something which currently looks pretty similar to vacuum energy density, but not exactly vacuum energy density. Okay, so for example, it can be something like a slowly rolling scalar field, okay, whose energy slowly varies over time as the universe expands. Considering inflation, that's what we believe was basically happening. The energy density of the inflaton field was very slowly changing over time. Yeah.
Doesn't the calculation of cosmological or no 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 sorry not the cosmo doesn't isn't the calculation of like vacuum energy isn't that doesn't that end up being much smaller than the value we'd expect for the dark energy?
So you're asking about the cosmological constant problem. Good. So that problem is actually the reverse. So if we naively try and compute the vacuum energy density, it should be 10 to the 120 times larger than what's seen.
And
therefore then people think that there's perhaps there's some, perhaps there's some symmetry principle setting it exactly to zero. So here I am not going to go into the cosmological constant problem. Okay. I'll just say that there is a possible either zero or non-zero value for the vacuum energy density. Okay. I won't get into all of the UFT problems associated with how to make the actual vacuum energy density as small as what's seen. Yeah. That being said, there does seem to be cosmological evidence for something that looks like vacuum energy density with a surprisingly small but non-zero value. We call that dark energy. We don't know if that behaves exactly like vacuum energy, okay? We don't know if the energy density is exactly constant as the universe expands, or instead if it's just slowly varying as the universe expands, okay? Yeah. So for that reason, I will distinguish between vacuum energy, cosmological constant, and also possible extra dark energy. Okay, yeah, yeah. And so in that sense, dot 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 means extra like dragons and things like dark energy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Similarly during things like phase transitions, you can also have, these energy densities not behaving in the simple power law way that I described. Yeah, And so in general, it's just useful just to, allow for all sorts of possible behavior, not just these very simple examples that we've gone through. Yeah. Okay, good. More questions? Shoot, we are going slow. Okay. So one thing that I should talk about for the homework is the following way then to re-express the Friedmann equations using these omegas. Okay, so let's do that. So as I said, regular non-relativistic matter scales like a to the minus three. Okay, so we can write that as rho matter today, a to the minus three. Similarly for rho radiation today, a to the minus four, and so on and so on. Plugging in all of these into our Friedmann equation, We got h squared is 8 pi g over 3. Rho matter today, a to the minus 3. Rho radiation today, a to the minus 4. Rho vacuum today, a to the 0. And then other possible things. Okay, minus k over r squared a squared. Okay, let's then divide both sides by the present day Hubble constant. Right? Okay, this thing, okay, so these constants on the left, that's just 1 over this thing that I defined before, the critical energy density. Okay, so this is all just 1 over rho critical. Right? And now let me just propagate this inside. Okay, so over rho critical, over rho critical, over rho critical, and so on.
Is that rho critical at a zero?
Like, oh, yes, you're exactly, thank you. Very good. Yes, you're exactly right. Yes, good point. Yeah. Okay, good. And now all of these ratios of rho over rho critical, that's just the omegas today, right? Okay, so let's just write that. Lambda today, and so on, and yeah, and then this term, of course, was just our omega curvature today, with a to the minus 2. Okay, good. Okay, good. So this is probably, you know, the most convenient form of the Friedmann equation, okay? You know, where we express h in units of the present day values, and the densities in units of, you know, the present day omegas, okay? The reason why we like to work this way is that once we measure just this small set of numbers, the present day matter omega, the present day radiation omega, the present day Hubble constant, okay? Once we've measured observationally those numbers, we can then predict all of the future behavior of the universe and also all of the previous history of the universe. And so in your guys' tutorial, you'll be doing an example of this, okay? Well, where you will measure some of these numbers using actual, you know, cosmological measured supernova measurements, okay? Don't worry, it's easy. it's not hard, yeah. do we have 5 minutes or no?
Yeah, we do.
What's that?
Six.
Yeah, okay. So then I wanted just to go through an example of doing this, okay? You know, an example where we use these numbers then to predict the future of some universe, okay? And so the example that I'll do is the following. Maybe I'll leave that. Okay, so let's just do a really quick, simple example. Well, hopefully we can finish it in 5 minutes. Okay, so let's consider a universe where omega matter is a little bit bigger than one, okay? But with no other components like radiation or vacuum energy density, okay, et cetera. Okay, so we have omega macro bigger than one, omega radiation zero, omega vacuum zero, and so on, okay? Now, because all of the omegas we said have to add up to one, what does this then say about the curvature?
It would have to
be negative. Yeah, exactly. Okay, right. So therefore, this implies that omega curvature is a little bit less than zero. Okay, which for our sign convention corresponds to positive spatial curvature. Right, you know, little k of plus one. Okay, good. So then let's work out the evolution of, you know, of some universe that has non-zero omega matter, non-zero negative omega curvature, vanishing everything else. Okay, so for that universe, the Hubble expansion rate, h squared, is just the present day Hubble expansion rate multiplied by omega matter today over a cubed, plus omega curvature today over a squared, right? Where again, these values that have zero subscripts, they are the present day values evaluated at a equal to one today. Okay, good. So what we'll do is to focus on some universe where today, so this omega matter is just like slightly more than one. Okay. And so I'll write that as omega matter today is like 1 plus some delta today. Okay? This is again at today at a equal to 1. Okay? And so since omega matter today plus omega curvature today have to add up to 1, this means that this is minus delta 0. Okay? So then this is h naught squared 1 plus delta right? Okay, so this is true at all times, okay? Not just today at equals to one, but also now for all times in the future, right? So what happens in the future, okay, for time is much, much later than a equal to one, okay? Specifically, what happens in the far, far future, okay? How do the relative sizes of these two terms behave in the far future, when a is much bigger than 1?
Well, 1 over a squared is dumb.
Yeah, exactly, okay? This term will become bigger than this term, relatively speaking, right? Okay? So initially, this term is really tiny compared to this term, but in the far future, this term gets more and more important, you know, in comparison to this term, okay? So we can even therefore find a maximum value of A that makes the right-hand side vanish, right? Okay, so why is that a maximum value of A? Why can't A get bigger than that? Okay, so what is the left-hand side again? Sorry?
We make the right-hand side negative.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I was thinking something even simpler. The left-hand side, again, is a dot over a squared, right? So at the a max, where this thing vanishes, a dot vanishes. And therefore, then a can't get any bigger, right? So if we plot a as a function of time, okay, so initially it's growing the way we've seen, okay, I'm right, you know, so initially it's growing almost like a matter-dominated universe with, you know, t to the 2/3, but then it has to slow down because of this extra curvature term. And so eventually, once you hit this maximum A max, okay, the slope becomes zero, and it stops growing, okay? Yeah, we can, okay, yeah. So let's just solve for this A max. I mean, it's really easy, right? Okay, so this equals this. So therefore, A max is 1 plus delta naught over delta naught, right? Yeah.
But after it stops growing, would it not start shrinking? Or no, because it's squared?
That was, okay. That was going to be the question I asked you guys. What happens next? Okay, good. So since you asked, good. So what happens after here? Yeah.
It becomes imaginary. What does that mean? Like, because you've got a negative on the right-hand side and square on the left-hand side. So then A dot is imaginary. What does that mean?
Well, this would be negative if I had A bigger than this value, right? But if I stop growing, then I'll never get to A bigger than that value.
True.
Right?
Right, right.
Okay. Okay. So, okay, good. So therefore, do we just stop here and just stay here forever? What do you guys think?
If the universe stopped expanding, then gravity should take over.
Yeah, okay. Which sounds weird. Okay, so far here I've only used the first Friedmann equation, right? We also had the second Friedmann equation. Do you guys recall what it was?
Yes, A double dot over A minus 4 pi 2 over 3 rho.
Okay, so here we're taking a universe where we have matter, which has no pressure, and nothing else like radiation or vacuum energy density that have pressure. So the pressure isn't present, but we do have a non-zero density of matter. And the curvature, remember, doesn't enter here. Okay? So therefore, what does that say then about the second derivative of A? Even at this time of A max?
Less than zero.
Sorry?
Second derivative is always less than zero, so.
This is exactly, right? Mm-hmm. Second derivative is non-zero and negative. So therefore, what does that do to the slope here? It has to go down, okay? Now, the Friedmann equation holds perfectly well for either sine of A dot. Right, it can be positive or negative, right? You know, it's being squared to get h squared. Okay, so you can convince yourself that the behavior after this point will be the exact same as the behavior up before this point. Okay, I'll just mirror imaged. Okay, so the future behavior is that the universe then just recollapses, okay, back down to the initial zero size, in a time equaling twice this time. Okay? And it's easy to work out exactly what that time is, but we're out of time, so I won't do that. Okay? What I will say, though, you know, is that this solution, okay, this is called the spherical collapse model, and this solution is basically the way that we understand how objects like galaxies form. Okay? You know, and so in the future, if you guys, you know, study advanced cosmology, where you do perturbations and you know, nonlinear structure formation, how to make things like galaxies. Okay, the starting point is just exactly this spherical collapse model. Yeah.
What do people think happens when you reach that time? Does A go negative?
Oh, good. Right. So what happens here when A goes to zero? Okay. Yeah. So. For this exact FRW universe, which is homogeneous isotropic, the collapse is all happening in the radial direction. And so what you'll get here is a curvature singularity, which mirrors the initial singularity that we started from called the Big Bang. Yeah. OK. That's for the exact unperturbed universe. In the presence of any non-zero perturbations, this collapse won't happen down all to a single point. Producing a bounce. But okay, in any case, though, for now we're sticking to just unperturbed universes. So yeah, okay. So formally, in this case, it will collapse down to a singularity. Yeah. Okay, I think we're out of time, so I will let you guys go. But if you have further questions, yeah, please just come up and ask me.